an absurd opera with a locust as a main character allows you to sort of tell allegorical tales in ways that maybe if I just had an actual scientist saying nothing but the science wouldn't be as effective.
From Wyoming Public Media, this is The Modern West. I'm Micah Schweitzer. Opera is not a form of entertainment typically associated with the Mountain West, but it's having a moment in Wyoming. Coming up, we'll hear how a scientist and a musician collaborated to write an opera about a bug. And opera singers trained in Las Vegas and New York City have started a new company in Casper. Daniel Quintana and his wife Emily Quintana are the co-founders of Opera Wyoming. Wyoming Public Radio's Aaron Jones spoke with Daniel Quintana.
So can you kind of tell me the story of how it started?
My wife is originally from Rock Springs, Wyoming. I'm originally from Wilmington, Delaware, and we met in Las Vegas. We were gondoliers at the Venetian Hotel and Casino. After a while, we did some opera with Opera Las Vegas, and that was actually both of our first foray into opera. The director there was a voice teacher named Judith Fredericks, and she convinced us to move to New York, so we studied some opera out there and did some opera. And then we moved back to Rock Springs in 2011. While we were there, we were doing these concerts with some of our friends in Las Vegas and also from New York. And those were very successful concerts. And then in 2013, we went to the Wyoming Arts Council under the guise of Opera Wyoming. And we had some, you know, nibbles here and there, wondering who we were and where we could perform. And then there's a little bit of a five-year hiatus. We moved to Casper, Wyoming in 2014. And then just this year, early in February, we just kind of said with a friend of ours who we met here in Casper, Johanna Swisher, it's like, why don't we just, you know, try to do this, you know, try to do Opera Wyoming and not have it just in Casper, but we'll be based in Casper, but try to bring opera throughout the entire state because no other opera company had done so in Wyoming. And so with the fiscal sponsorship from the Nicolaysen Art Museum, we are doing our first season. We've had a lot of interest outside of Casper, and that was our initial intention anyway, is to bring a lot of opera cultural to the surrounding towns in Wyoming.
What is it like to bring something like opera, which, you know, is a centuries old art form and what we predominantly think of as a pretty European or Italian art form? What is it like to bring something like that to Wyoming?
It's absolutely fantastic because at first there's such a trepidation because you're just wondering. We honestly thought, I think we're just doing this for ourselves. And then the very first concert, we had so many people thanking us for bringing it there. So it's amazing how this, basically this 420-year-old art form is finding a new market in Wyoming. And the reception has just been absolutely amazing because you have people who are just finding opera, and then you have people who have moved to Wyoming from major cities that had opera companies and just aren't able to get out to the opera like they used to.
What made you turn to opera?
It's just something that just kind of called to me. It kind of just kind of entered my life. So I always knew it was there, but then when the opportunity came, I just said, sure. So I went in head first.
The opportunity.
Opportunity. There you
go.
Yeah,
that was horrible.
We use it too. It's okay.
So I think anybody doing opera, especially in New York, is probably a small fish in a big pond. And now you're probably a big fish in a small pond. Can you kind of talk a little bit about what that's like?
Here's the interesting thing that we're finding. Yeah, we can admit that we're kind of the big fish in the small pond, but there seems to be like all these other fishies in the pond that we don't know about and have a major hidden talent, whether they used to sing opera or musical theater. And the folks that we've been finding, it's amazing. Like, we had one gentleman who studied at Indiana in his 20s and then moved to the medical profession. And then he's like, I don't even know why I'm even contacting you guys, but I'd like to audition for you. And he's this amazing tenor who lives here in Casper, and he hasn't sung, and he sounds amazing. What the whole hope is that we'll be able to do collaborations within each town. So we'll have like a group of three or four people within Opera Wyoming. But as we travel throughout the towns, we'll hold like auditions prior to any performances and do collaborations with the people already living there. So that way we're really making sure it's still Wyoming accessible. And if the need comes that we need to bring somebody in from one of our friends from New York or Las Vegas, then we'll do so. But we're really trying to keep it Wyoming.
Can you tell me about the next show that you have?
The next show is called Shakespeare Goes to the Opera, and it's based on a show that we did in New York in, I believe, 2009. We did it in collaboration with the Old Vic's New Voices program in New York. And so basically, we took scenes from Shakespeare, and then we also tried to find the correlations either in musical theater or opera and told the basic Shakespeare story, interspersing the drama with the music. We had so much music and so many options to consider that we probably will be doing another Shakespeare Goes to the Opera next season because there are just so many shows and so many choices. This particular show, we will have Romeo and Juliet, Macbeth, and also Taming of the Shrew. That'll be interspersed with opera and musical theater.
So after this season, what are your plans? What are your hopes?
After this season, my wife and I actually right now are kind of planning 3 to 5 years out right now. Because we are based in Casper, we still like to do some things within the community. But we're supposed to be going to Rock Springs possibly in March or April to do a collaboration with them for an arts festival. And one of the big things we really would like to do is sort of a traveling fringe festival during the summer for Wyoming. So it'll be a little bit of opera, a little bit of musical theater and drama, whatever else we can attract, and just kind of do a traveling fringe here and there.
So four scientists and four artists walk into a bar. It sounds like a setup to a joke, but the punchline is that scientists and artists actually can team up to create new and unexpected work. Jeff Lockwood is a professor at the University of Wyoming. As a creative writer and an entomologist, his own career straddles the arts and the sciences. So for what he called the U-Cross pollination experiment, he mixed up 8 of his colleagues for 11 days in the summer of 2015 at the U-Cross Foundation to see what might happen.
Four scientists and four artists walk into a bar. The bartender lines up bottles of ecology, geology, physiology, microbiology, dance, sculpture, music, and poetry, along with glasses shaped to hold playfulness, intimacy, confusion, and urgency. Then he tells them to make themselves a drink.
But Lockwood says there was no guarantee the drinks would actually taste any good.
I thought that with four pairs that we would have a really good chance at one of them working well, two of them working sort of, and one of them maybe not completely blowing up.
In the end, though, he says all the scientist-artist pairs came up with exciting projects.
And something that could not have been done otherwise.
Like a rock opera, pardon the pun, about Powder River Basin geology. Some projects, like the opera, look more like art, some more like science, like a project between a physiological ecologist and a dance choreographer. Michael Dillon studies bees, how they forage in flowers, and how pesticides affect them. And if you watch bees closely, you see that they move in very particular ways. But scientists don't have a good way to notate those movements. Choreographers, like Rachel Shaw, do. It's called Laban movement analysis. Shaw says it's like sheet music for motion instead of sound.
There's a way to write down movements. And not just the like literal like physical thing that's happening, but the qualitative parts of it as well.
I could show you two boxes with bees, and you could look at one and look at the other, and you could tell me this one's sick. But you may not be able to tell me exactly what it is about the way those bees are moving that makes them seem sick. Mm-hmm. And this approach allows us to kind of do that.
Shaw has adapted Laban movement analysis to show how the bees in Dillon's experiments are moving differently. So Shaw, the artist, helps Dylan, the scientist, to discover new data.
I mean, I feel like I see new things. I'm doing stuff that I wouldn't have otherwise done were it not for this collaboration.
They plan on publishing a paper about their study, probably the first one ever co-authored by a physiological ecologist and a choreographer, and to create a dance concert to convey the findings to the public. For another study that germinated at the U-Cross pollination experiment, Dylan is working with sculptor Ashley Hope Carlisle to make research about bumblebees accessible to the public through interactive sculptures. And the National Science Foundation is funding that project to the tune of nearly $500,000. Jeff Lockwood says that's partly because the science is being translated through art.
So by combining the arts with the sciences, he became, or they became, much more competitive for NSF funding because science has to be in discourse with the public.
On the other hand, when Lockwood was looking to fund the U-Cross pollination experiment, some potential funders balked at the idea.
Wait a minute. This is vague. It's uncertain. We don't know exactly what's going to happen. You haven't described the products. And I said, well, exactly. That's exactly it.
Because, he says, this kind of work is risky. He knew it going into the experiment. It might not work. And many scientists and artists are stuck in their disciplines, as Rachel Shaw and Michael Dylan have discovered.
My colleagues are like, what is this thing? This is crazy. And her colleagues are the same thing. Why are you wasting your time interacting with the scientists? Right? So.
But Jeff Lockwood also points out, no risk, no reward. And Lockwood wants UW to embrace that attitude. He'd like the university to rethink the old divide between the arts and the sciences. Choreographer Rachel Shaw agrees.
And this is like a really big statement to make, but I feel like the boxes that we've been put in our society, it served us for a while, but I feel like as a culture, it's not serving us anymore.
After the initial U-Cross pollination experiment, Jeff Lockwood and a fellow professor at the University of Wyoming teamed up to create yet another original opera about the story of an unusual subject, the Rocky Mountain locust. Wyoming Public Radio's London Homer Wambeam has that story.
If you lived in Wyoming in the late 1800s, you would recognize this sound. This is the sound of millions of locusts blackening the sky. What you hear is a recreation of a locust swarm from the 2007 film The Reaping. These insects look a lot like grasshoppers, and they are very, very hungry.
Congress in the 1800s called the Rocky Mountain locust the greatest impediment to the settlement of the western United States.
That's Dr. Jeff Lockwood, who studied locusts for years as an insect ecologist at the University of Wyoming. He says that the Rocky Mountain locust would decimate crops, leading to famine and huge economic setbacks for farmers. But in 1877, the Rocky Mountain locust vanished, something that remains a mystery. The reason Lockwood chose the topic is because the story about vanishing locusts is dramatic and literally biblical. The composer is Dr. Ann Guzzo, a fellow professor at the University of Wyoming. Guzzo admits an opera about locusts might not work.
I'm not sure it does, actually, and that's part of the attraction. An absurd opera with a locust as a main character allows you to sort of tell allegorical tales in ways that maybe if I just had an actual scientist saying nothing but the science wouldn't be as effective.
Lockwood wrote the libretto, or the lyrics for the opera, basing it on a book he wrote about the subject. He worked closely with Guzzo while she composed music for his words. They've worked together before during the U-Cross pollination experiment, a 2014 project that brought together scientists and artists. In many ways, Locust the Opera is a continuation of that experiment. Once they had the opera written, the next piece that Guzzo and Lockwood needed was a conductor, Thomas Blomstar. His role is to keep everyone on track.
I want to do my best to be really honest to what Annie wrote. The training of classical musicians especially is one that encourages poetic license. And I'm a real, nasty cop about that stuff.
Blomstar has a personal connection to the Rocky Mountain locust. His great-grandfather settled in South Dakota in the late 1800s and survived locust swarms.
And so I certainly heard about that from my grandfather and from my uncle, who's still on the family farm.
Next, the production needed a soprano to play the locust. Blomstar and Guzzo had worked with professional soprano Kristen Colvin in the past, and they knew she was open to experimental concepts.
So they contacted me and they said, we have this project we think you would be interested in. And I said, yes.
Colvin became much more than the soprano, though, and filled the role of stage director. Colvin says the opera uses absurdity and dream logic to convey more complex ideas.
When you cross over that permeable land into dreams, you have opportunities to envision the world in a different way. You can see creatures that don't necessarily fit the laws of physics, and you can really play with that.
In the story, Colvin plays the ghost of the Rocky Mountain Locust. She has a dialogue with two other characters, a farmer and a scientist. The farmer and scientist have very different relationships with the ghost of the locust. For the scientist, the locust is a muse and a mystery as he tries to discover the cause of its extinction. For the farmer, the locust threatens his survival. It's difficult to capture the scale of a locust swarm with a small chamber opera, so Lockwood says the opera will also have audience participation.
The audience will be equipped with sheets of cellophane. And then using a certain code that the conductor will teach them, they will make the sound of a swarm passing through the auditorium.
Composer Ann Guzzo adds,
I'm sure you've gone to a show where you were mad that someone was wrinkling the paper, and now we're actually asking you to wrinkle your program.
All the people involved in Locust the Opera are excited to be working on something original and experimental, which Blomstar says is a rarity in opera.
Especially in the realm of classical music, like if you play in a symphony orchestra professionally for a while, you see the same damn pieces every 3 years. It's like on a rotation.
The team hopes to tour Locust the Opera around the world. One planned show is in Morocco at a conference for orthopterologists. That's people who study grasshoppers, crickets, and locusts. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm London Homer Wambim.
And that's it for this edition of The Modern West. Keep an eye out for a new episode in a couple of weeks. We're increasing our production schedule. David Graff produced this episode. Anna Rader is our web editor. The theme music is by Jeff Troxell. And I'm Micah Schweitzer. The Modern West is a production of Wyoming Public Media.